I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
You're the only person I know who's at the meeting.
We're all on a schedule. Hey, I'd like to excuse council members Craig Wright and Cecilia Benson tonight. You have the minutes and the agenda in front of you. Are there any changes or alterations we need to make on those? If not, I would welcome a motion.
So moved.
Great, is there a second? All right, lots of seconds, thank you.
Who was the second?
Let's say Terry.
Terry, we may ask you to, you know, state your record if that's ever called into question, so thank you.
Our next meeting is going to be September 22nd. And I don't know that there's members of the public, but let's just take a second. If there is any members of the public that would like to make a comment or question, we'd welcome that. Leave the chat button open. No, I don't hear any. Okay, so we'll just kind of keep moving on. So we're going to go down to Section 7, Board Business. We'll start with Aurora Bill, the Program Director of Art in Transit. We're looking forward to this. Thank you.
Oh, right now.
Right now.
And I have 10 minutes, and I'm going to put my timer on.
This is for me. Yes, this is for me. It's an improvement for me. I'd rather be you than me. Sorry. I married you.
Talk a little bit about Art in Transit from Schools to Community, which is a program that I spearheaded almost 10 years ago. We're at the 10-year anniversary. So I kind of call myself the director of the Art in Transit from Schools to Community project, although it's not an official title, but it's something that I'm very passionate about and dedicate a lot of hours to make sure it's in our community. And I really appreciate CBTD for their support over the last 10 years with this project. So my goal today is to give you some background information about it. And Todd is a little nervous because I have lots of slides, but I'll keep it under 10. I'm a visual artist, so I like to show images. And there's nothing better than seeing images of kids making art and seeing art. So I will go quickly. I will highlight certain projects a little bit more than others. But so in a nutshell, what is Art in Transit from Schools to Community? Years ago, I lived in Phoenix, Arizona, and when I was living there, I was actually a visiting artist in an Art in Transit project. So I was an artist that worked in the schools with children. They created art and put it on the buses. And I felt like it was such a great opportunity. And when I moved here about 15 plus years ago, I had the vision of maybe doing something like that here. And with the support of CBTD, we are doing it in our community. So what are the goals of Art in Transit? For me, my little mission statement that I did 10 years ago was Art in Transit brings art made by children into public places. That was my main goal, to bring the art into our community. It also, the program or the project advocates and supports arts education in our community. So my other goal was, at the time, I was the district arts coordinator for Cache County School District, and I was very interested in getting the attention of the administrators and my superintendent, Steve Norton. I wanted them to get excited about arts education. And so it was kind of an advocacy tool to get attention or positive attention to the arts. And Art in Transit empowers students through the arts as they contribute to the community in a positive way. So a huge benefit of this program is it is a very positive experience for children and all the way up to high school students. And it's in our community and people are benefiting from this beautiful artwork. So we piloted it in 2011-2012, was the very first year in my own small community neighborhood school, Providence Elementary. And I won't talk about each specific project, although I have images, because it was good to see where we started and where we are. But it did start just with an art teacher at Providence Elementary. I asked her if she would be willing to do some printmaking with her students. And then we ended up taking their artwork and putting it on our first bus. And I will mention the very first project or first idea was to get it inside the bus as bus placards. And then it grew into artwork on the outside of the bus. So I've already mentioned this, but some of the goals of the project, students engage in arts integrated lessons relating to ideas around community and place. Students create artwork that's displayed in our city. Students collaborate and contribute to their community in a positive way. And they just have fun making art, which is should be one of our goals, right? So here's way back when. Now some of these students, I think, are just about to graduate from Ridgeline, or maybe already have if I did my math right. So I'm going to go quickly, but just to show you kind of where it started with a simple printmaking project. And we always get public, you know, nice, positive articles in the newspaper, which is always a bonus. So how did we support the funding for this? CBTD has been so generous and wonderful with the outside of the buses, and we'll talk more about that, the inside of the buses.
You might have to give me a halfway.
The inside of the buses, I just started asking businesses the very first year, just asked local businesses to sponsor the printing of the placards, $20 a placard. So I ended up getting a lot of local sponsorship, then wrote a couple grants to Crayola, Utah Division of Arts and Museums, Logan Summerfest, and it just kind of took off from there. So we work with teams in the schools. I usually bring in a visiting artist. They work with students for anywhere from a week to maybe 8 weeks, depending. We integrate into the other core content areas. So the arts are integrated with maybe language arts or science, social studies, math. And then the students create this wonderful artwork that then we photograph. By the way, we usually have some sort of end of the project celebration, bring in parents and administrators and superintendents, and just a wonderful way to showcase the artwork. There's Superintendent Norton. And then we get it on the buses. So we print it. I work with Square One. They print the bus placards. We reproduce them. Todd has provided or given me permission to provide about 8 placards per bus, or I think we have about maybe 18 to 20 buses now with the bus placards. So we try to have each bus with a different project. So that was, I'm just gonna kind of keep moving on. We continue to get grant support through different foundations and or through the school district, through their foundation. And we've also had projects at Greenville Elementary with fourth graders connecting to Native American history. I'm sorry, I'm going really fast, but we're gonna just get that overload of images. We also received the Sorenson Legacy Award for Excellence in Arts Education. One of the things that they were really excited about was the Art in Transit from Schools to Community project. So it was statewide recognition and $5,000 that went with it to the school district when I was working there. So the next year we worked at Park Elementary and brought in a comic artist, and he made this beautiful artwork with these, I think they were fifth graders, about how to share the air, how to save the air. So they created these superheroes to help ward off the bad pollution. And then we made them into bus placards again. Had some nice newspaper articles. The next year, we did another project at Lincoln Elementary, again bringing in a visiting artist for about a week. They made these little self-portraits, created little drawings of communities. And then it shifted over to Utah State University. So I asked the superintendent if I could take this project with me in my new position at Utah State. So from 2017 to present, I'm not writing as many grants. I'm not seeking out as much support. I'm mostly funding it through my endowment budget. So I have a budget for specifically that focuses on community outreach. So we brought in an artist again to Canyon Elementary and did these wonderful glass pieces. Then we went to Mount Logan Middle School, worked with sixth graders, brought in a renowned poet, Kealoha, who did poetry with the students, and then the art teacher worked on artwork with the students. students, and we created these wonderful placards. And our last project happened right when the pandemic began at Wilson Elementary, yes, with Sue Sorensen. But here's, you haven't seen them. This is what they look like. So we finally completed them just a few months ago. And they worked with different women that have had an impact on their life. Okay, so I'm shifting. So that's the bus placards. And then the outside of the bus, we've been doing a high school bus route contest for since, well, really 2013 was the first year that we did the outside of the bus. And CVTD has been wonderful about allowing students to create these designs for, and then it's a competition. I go out to the high schools, I recruit students, tell them about our program. They submit artwork, and then we have a committee that reviews the artwork and selects the winning design. And then it goes on a bus for 1 year, sometimes two, because we have one right now that's staying a little bit longer. And CVTD pays for the bus route. And I kind of do the legwork behind the scenes and getting promoting the program and getting students to submit their designs. And it's had a really positive impact on our community. Students really enjoy seeing their artwork all around our community. So it started out smaller. You can see this, that was year one, year two. Beautiful designs. Our teachers are very much a part of recruiting and getting their students to submit these designs and even making it an art assignment in their class, so that our teachers in our community are an integral piece. 1 year we did a little shift and did a seventh grade bus that I was able to find some funding through a grant to put on the outside of one bus, and we worked with seventh graders. They had to come up with their own design and then the winning design on the bus. Okay, here we go. So I'm going to just keep showing you over the years what it's looked like. And you can see that they've definitely been different every year. We did a full bus route. And we, isn't that beautiful? And we usually unveil it at Summerfest in June, Father's Day weekend. At one point we did some little small buses as well, which you'll see right here. Here's the students' designs. And then they go on to the, we had them on the paratransit buses. And Fast Forward had a winning design 1 year, the Alternative High School. Here's some of the posters and things. I go out to the school, they have to fill this template. And this is our last bus that is you probably have seen on the roads right now. And we made a shift. The pandemic happened, so we had a little delay. And then we just found that not as many students were actually submitting. So we thought, let's take a break from the high school bus route and highlight some elementary artwork. So that last bus that you were seeing in our
community. It's a great honor to see my artwork.
Let me ask if he's okay. There's a short video, but it will go over my 10 minutes. So I could always leave it, and you could show it another time, or we could show it. It's about 4 minutes long.
Why don't you do it? How long is it?
Four.
4 minutes. Go ahead and hit play.
Okay.
We're running ahead of schedule.
I think it'd be a fun
greatest day. Yet. On a public bus, everyone would be, wow, who made that great portrait? I wish I could do that.
Art in Transit from Schools to Community is a project that I spearheaded in 2011. And the purpose of the project is to bring artwork made by children into public places. I really wanted to empower children, bring confidence to children, and just get art in our community and bring attention to the importance of arts education. So I found that this was a way that we could do it. Every year we have a high school bus route competition where we allow students to enter their designs for the bus route. Usually we have a theme like building communities or share the air. And then we are able to showcase the artwork up to 1 year, sometimes 2 years on the outside of one bus. This year we're making a little shift, and instead of having a high school bus route, we have elementary artwork on the outside of one bus. But we also have artwork on the inside. So usually the elementary students create artwork for the bus placards that go on the interior of several of the buses in our community. The theme of this project was people who give them courage. And a lot of them did women because the previous year, that was the celebration of women being able to vote. So we have artwork created by fifth graders. They created watercolor portraits and they created portraits of women that have made an impact in their lives. We also have some portraits by first graders and sixth graders. The first graders created self-portraits, their collage portraits, and the sixth graders created pop art-inspired self-portraits. And the watercolor portraits are created by fifth graders from Wilson Elementary.
Portrait painted about a person named Amelia Earhart. She was first woman to be a female pilot. She flew, and she had the record to fly the highest and farthest of all time. Thought of my mom first because she's there for me, so I was like, oh, she's great, and I should do her. She's a great example to me, so that's why I drew her.
What I liked about the project was that obviously I could make new colors. The teacher said we could make new ones to make it look more interesting, to make people surprised, wow, it looks so great. Wow, I never even thought of doing that.
I learned faces are harder to draw than you think they are, and also while you're doing watercolor, you have to like use the paintbrush a lot more than you think.
It empowers them because it is in a public place. It's giving it purpose. That purpose then filters into all these other things into their lives.
I was really shocked when I heard that it was on the bus. It's like super cool. It means a lot to me because, you know, finally being able to like show it to other people than just like my family and my classmates. Like having it go around the city and stuff is really cool and makes me happy.
It's pretty good to do hard work. Then you accomplish it and you'll feel like, wow, this took me a lot of work and I did it. But I accomplished it. And if people like it, that's the thing I like. People like it, love it. But most of the things I do are mostly messed up. And that's not really what I hope for. But this, I did not mess up. That's a really cool thing about it. And when people see it, they're gonna like it. I hope.
It's very important to have children's artwork in public places to promote the value and importance of arts education.
Yay, thank you for letting me show that. So I have to know it was 100 degrees that day. It was really hot. We were all sweating, and so we all look a little... So if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them. I know we're a little over time, so I really appreciate you taking the time to allow me to be here today.
Thanks, Aurora. That's a great program.
Thank you.
Thank you. I saw some of you smiling when you watched that. It really hits your, I feel like, your heart when you see the kids talking about the impact that it's made on them and how much they enjoy having the art and transit program in the school. So yes.
Well, I have just a short comment to make.
Sure.
Todd and Ron and I had the opportunity to drive to Park City during the Olympics. And there was one day when we were kind of together, like for lunch break or something, and Park City bus drove by, wrapped in all of their advertising, and they all said, we said, ugh, that looks ugly, we're not going to get that for our buses. And when I saw the first wrapped bus with that art, I thought, oh, I like that, that's good, way to go. What a neat way to combine two efforts. And I can't imagine how fun it must be to be, having been the artist, and see your picture right down the street, wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah, to be a student artist, seeing your bus, it makes a big impact. So thank you.
Other questions, comments? Thank you so much. Great program. We appreciate what you're doing.
Well, thank you, CBTD, for allowing me to build this program through your entity, and I hope we get to work together more.
So. Great. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Okay, Jeff Turley, will you lead us in a conversation about the policy manual update, please?
Yes. For the past several months, the PEP committee has been working at consolidating that big, thick governance manual to make it a little more simpler to read and make it so that when you first become a board member, you don't look at that and then fall asleep when you're reading it. We've already done sections 1 and 2, and we're presenting to you section 3 tonight for your approval. So you have copies of it on page 6, 7, 8, 9 of your packet. As you look at it, you'll notice that it is very condensed. But we went through it several times and we came to the conclusion that this is probably the best comprehensive way to describe what was in that manual at that time. And it hits all the points without all the fluff. So we bring it, if anybody has any questions on this, let me know. I didn't think there would be because it's very simple.
Right.
Thank you. Now we're going to bring it to a vote. All those that would like to approve this section 3 of the manual?
Yeah, we just...
Oh, you'll let you do that.
Chair. I guess I get to. You can make a motion.
Yeah, okay. I make a motion to approve this section 3 of the governor's policy manual.
Okay, great. Thank you for you and the policy committee for what you're doing. We need a motion. Did you make a motion?
I did.
Okay, and a second?
Second.
Gregory's got a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Great. Thank you. Jeff, thank you. Let's go to a facility update by Dave Geary. Dave?
So, starting on page 10, there's some information about the process that we went through in order to select a construction company for the new facility. It's important, I think, that all of you know what the process was, because it's different than what is traditionally done. Traditionally, you would decide to build a building, you would work with an architect who would put together specs and drawings, then you would accept bids from builders, and based on whatever criteria you wanted, usually who was the low bidder, you would decide who your construction company is. The next iteration of that process is the design build process, where there's some overlap between construction and design. What we decided to do is called CMGC. Does anybody know what that means? Curtis, tell us.
Construction Manager General Contractor.
Right. Which creates a lot of overlap. It shortens the time frame, and it usually ends up with a less expensive and higher quality product. So that's important to know as you go through the criteria that we used. So on the next page, you can see the committee that we had two board members, had three architects, one of those which was our independent expert. Todd was there, Curtis was there, Jody was there, Nicole and Mindy Spackman were there on the committee. We did a preliminary review or scoring of all of those different construction companies based upon their response to the RFP, which is the request for proposal. Based on that, we selected the three highest construction companies and invited them to come and interview with the selection committee, which they did. It was a really rigorous process. They sweat bullets, I think, but that's okay. Based on their responses, we then went back and we updated our scores, and then we took the average of all of the scores of each of the members of the committee, and we came up with an average, and then we added them up, and the one with the highest score was Big D Construction. If you're really interested, one of the questions that came up in a previous meeting is, in this process, we're not selecting a construction company based upon the lowest bid to build the building. It's based on their expertise, on their ability, what they bring to the table in the pre-construction process. So we asked them, from cost perspective, what are you going to charge us for the pre-construction process, and what is your markup on cost? What's going to be your profit percentage? So based upon those two numbers, we actually did get some numbers.
You'll see that there is a criteria that talks about price. And those two items were the items that we asked about when it came to price. And there's a criteria there if you really want to go through that. But ultimately, as a group in the selection process, after all the scoring was done and after a lot of discussion, we selected BD as our construction committee.
Great. Okay, thank you and the committee for vetting that process. I think we're looking for a motion here, aren't we?
Who is their architectural
firm? Just information.
Yeah. David, who's their architectural firm they're working with?
Our architect is Stantec, is the architect, oh. And they partnered with Design Blast as well.
Okay.
So are we talking golf scores on the price one, or you know, does a high value mean cheaper, or does a low value mean cheaper?
We're talking their golf score.
That's true. They're saying they can provide us the building we need on budget, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean we're still looking at design. We haven't got the cost projections yet. Yeah.
But in answer to your question, on the price side, if it was low, that means that they had a high price.
So in essence, we're choosing the highest bid, not the lowest.
The
highest cost.
Low score, high cost, or high score, low cost?
Had you been in the meeting, you would have understood that those that bid low didn't understand the process.
No, I'm not surprised.
And so what it means is that Big D gave us a lot more information than any of the other companies. And as a result, you know, looking at it strictly from a price perspective, they were lowest on the totem pole, if you will.
But you suspect that when all is said and done, whatever company did it, it would probably be.
They would not be able to do it for the price they said they could do it.
Okay.
And we all understood that to be the case.
Okay.
It was really clear from the discussion that we had that Big D had the most expertise, brought more to the table when it came to the pre-construction process, as well as the fact that from an experience perspective, they had three jobs where they did something exactly like this, where they had to deal with the federal government that were transit authority projects, where the other companies only had one. And so, if you look at the other areas, you can see they scored highly in those other areas. And overall, they scored highest out of all the companies.
And they just finished the airport.
They did.
Other questions or comments? Thanks, Dave. Appreciate you presenting that. Leanna, can you talk to us about the alternatives planning process? Alternatives.
Sure. I'm going to read from notes a lot, so I get all this right. But so the steering committee, myself, Sean Bushman, Lyle Lundberg, Paul James, and Terry Waringa. Okay. So we get to serve on the steering committee. And we've met a couple of times. The committee's been involved in meetings on two different projects that are going on right now. The first mile, last mile project, which is headed by Cache County in partnership with CBTD. And this project's goal is to identify barriers to access CBTD bus system in each community within CBTD's service area. Kimley Horn is the consultant helping on the project. And they are using various factors to identify key stops that have potential barriers to eliminate. So we're just looking at stops and service and those barriers. They've provided the initial results to the cities and are now asking for their local input on the stops that have been identified. The second project in your packet on pages 16, 17, and 18
There's three different maps. So we are looking at service alternatives for the southeast part of Logan, River Heights, Providence, Millville, and a portion of Nibley. And the goal is to see if there are other types of service besides having fixed routes in these areas to provide more efficient service. CVTD knows that there are a lot of people dependent on the service, but there hasn't been much ridership in these areas in the past. So the purpose of different alternatives would be to continue to provide access for people. Kimberly Horn has proposed that CVTD look at on-demand service, which looks like Uber Pool. Passengers could schedule a trip via an app or the phone, and the bus would pick them up at a street corner. And the service groups passengers together to increase efficiency, and the passenger can travel in the zone or transfer to the loop or another fixed route if they need to travel outside the zone. And there's three different alternatives for those zones. The steering committee, which is made up of city staff and our CVTD steering committee, we've met a couple of times in guiding this process, and Kimberly Horn is ready to release the three different alternatives to the public via surveys to gather input in the coming weeks. And they're planning to gather public input in September and then come and present findings and a final recommendation to the board in October. So that's kind of where things are at with that right now. So we'll continue working on that.
Good job.
That was a lot of information. Is that okay?
Can you explain who's responsible for the last mile? Will it be the cities? Will it be CBPD, or is it the county?
Sure. So I think the purpose of the last mile study was to identify those projects, and then also the consultant's going to help identify potential funding. So some of that could be funding to help the city do the project, but also maybe for us to, as a board, to figure out, should we help assist with some of those projects? So what's that? So I think that's part of the discussion with the first mile, last mile.
Are we talking sidewalks?
Yeah, maybe. It may be that we need to connect sidewalks, right? So that could be a barrier to the bus stop, because there's not sidewalks. It could be that there's not a waiting area like a bench or something like that. So that's what they're working on, is identifying those barriers and then figuring out, okay, what makes sense, how do we mitigate that, who does that. Great question.
So I got that right. The shaded area, you would no longer have fixed route.
Correct.
You would have on-demand.
On-demand.
Kind of like calling a taxi or something.
Yeah. Kind of like that. It's not a taxi. It's not a personal thing, right? You're going to share a vehicle.
They do have that option, though. I mean, we do have an Uber option she's putting out to supplement Uber.
Correct, yeah. That could be something, yeah. If Uber or Lyft are enough in the system that you could subsidize a trip or something like that. But no, it could be a combination, Mike. Like, so you see on alternative two, you have on demand, but Route 11 is still functioning there. It just depends. Alternative one, if you go back to alternative one, Brad, so in that particular area, then you see that most of it is really just on demand. It replaces the fixed route that was there. We had two routes, 13 and 14. That would be serving that area currently, and then would replace those routes.
But the on-demand also takes it to a bus stop where they can get to rather than portal to portal.
Yeah, so the great thing about on-demand is pretty flexible. So you could still have bus stops on-demand that stop at in the community, or you could do it on any street corner, or you could even do it door to door. It's really flexible in what you can do. Obviously, the more service you provide, the more cost there is with that. And so you can do that. These are things that they're looking at and considering and they'll come back with.
But on-demand does not mean call like an Uber. I'm here and I want to go there.
Well,
on-demand takes you to a bus stop location that you can then go on the rest of your ride.
Correct. With on-demand, you can only go within the zone, point to point.
Okay.
And if you want to go out of the zone, then we would put you onto the fixed route system, mm-hmm. and then that's how you can continue. So you can see currently on service alternative one, this is a great example of how the public input process and working with the steering committee, when we were out at the bus rodeo, for example, we had the displays up and we were taking input, and the comment was made that, you know, wouldn't it make sense that we have the on-demand zone go to at least the transit center? So if somebody, for example, wanted to go to the hospital, they would only transfer once to Route 2, where if we drop them on the loop, they would have to transfer at the loop, and they have to transfer to Route 2. That's two transfers. That really starts to deter people from using. And so I was like, hey, that's a fair comment. We should really consider that and look at that. And so that's why the public input process, the steering committee, is such a viable thing. So I appreciate all the members of the committee that are providing input and direction, and the same with the city staff. It's really a good process.
One of the other things, though, Jeannie, is if you was within a unit, say, in that zone, say he was in Millville, and you need to go to the doctor, and his office was in Providence, they'd mm-hmm. take him right to that office.
Right.
So what's the goal of this? Is it to save money, to reduce taking those two buses that are there the whole service day, or is it to give better service to that area? Because, I mean, if you're taking away two buses, how many on-demand buses do you anticipate being there? Three? I mean, you know, two? You're not going to save any money if it's...
Yeah, I don't know that the goal is necessarily to save money. I think the goal is to provide better access, right? We know there's areas right now where the fixed route is, people have to walk quite a distance to provide the access. So we go with
Are the existing fixed routes currently on that map?
They're not.
Okay, sorry.
They're not. Okay. But they're on the very west side of that area, right? And so sometimes that barrier is just a physical distance, right? And so, yeah, to your point, Ron, it's a great point. It's more about providing access. But again, can we do it for the same price, or is it going to be different? That's what we're in the process of looking at as well.
I mean, and that's going to grow too. You start off with one bus, and then the demand's going to start kicking up, and we're going to add two, three, but you know.
And that's the other great thing about on demand. It's flexible, right? So it works better where there's sprawl, where we have a lot of spread out population, because fixed route's hard to serve that. That's Route 11, right? It tries to do all things, and it's really slow along. So it works in serving sprawl. But as population either densifies or just usage goes up, then you come back with a fixed route option, and you say, okay, now we're back to a larger bus is needed. And so it really gives us just another tool in the toolbox that we can look at.
But also you have some buses that go up into a more affluent area that doesn't use transportation,
right.
That you don't need to take up there anymore.
Yeah.
Can I, we've been saying buses, but we've talked about different vehicles, and so that might make a difference in prices as well.
Yeah, Sprinter.
Yeah, we're doing Sprinter vans.
A lot cheaper to maintain than a 40-foot Gillig.
And they're much cheaper to buy, too.
Yeah.
Would the bus be in that area, or the Sprinter, whatever?
Yeah, it would operate within that zone.
And it would just stay put till it got a call, or?
Mm-hmm. Do it have a tablet on the screen that would let the driver know when he needs to go pick up somebody and not? There's an app, yeah, it'd be similar to like Uber.
Yeah.
I mean, for you to get a ride, you would do that.
Right.
You would do similar to an Uber type thing.
And you need to schedule it. It's just not really on call.
Well, it depends. It's very flexible. You could have people schedule a day in advance, or you can have people schedule 45 minutes in advance. It's really flexible.
You could also have a schedule, so if you want to be picked up every day at your house and be taken to your work, you could schedule that appointment to pick up and drop off. Return.
Curtis is concerned. Go ahead.
It's a private car.
Most of them, the on-demand systems don't function quite like that. I mean,
some do. I mean, there's a lot of variety out there. That's the thing. This is a lot of flexibility. We'll talk in a minute on what Summit County's doing. I have a report on that,
yeah.
And it's a little different. But there's a lot of flexibility in that, and we can turn those switches on and off, and so it just gives us a great tool in the toolbox.
Other comments or questions? Thanks, Larry. I appreciate the presentation, and thanks to the steering committee for what you're doing. Glenn, would you give us a presentation on the second quarter financials?
Yes. Committee had a meeting with Todd and Curtis last week, and everything seems to be running okay. I think you've got the summaries here. Interesting that the sales tax is running higher than last year. I think, Curtis, could you explain a little bit more detail about that?
Sure. On the page 20, we keep track of everything month to month, and we compare to the previous year. And month over month, we're seeing consistently right around 29% higher sales tax this year than the prior year. I'm going to stand up here so I'm not talking people's backs. That's astronomical. I mean, the city, this is representative of what the cities are seeing. We can see city by city. So a lot of the cities are seeing these same type of numbers. I've never seen this type of growth ever.
Isn't a lot of that caused by internet sales?
Well, internet sales came online last year, and so we saw a decent bump. My personal take on it, as we've graphed this out, we've analyzed this from all sorts of different ways. A ton of stimulus money came into play at the start of the year, carryover dollars from last year, a boost up in the per child tax credit, and now that's rolling into people's bank accounts on a monthly basis starting in July. Larger than normal tax returns because of people getting some extra stimulus. And it really is incredible to see how much higher this really is relative to previous years. So last year we saw a real big bump because of internet sales. I think we're continuing to see even more from that. But prior to those years, our increases, I mean, really, really good year was 6%, 7%. 9% was great. And so 29% is really, really high.
But part of that 29% represents 2020, doesn't it? Because it doesn't come to you till January.
Yeah, but I keep track of it on the specific month that it actually relates to, because it's 2 months late is the way it works, and so I just back everything up 2 months, and so I compare exactly month to month, quarters to quarters, because quarter ends are always higher because there's quarter end tax filers. So I'm always looking at the specific month to month comparisons, quarter by quarter. And that 29% is where we stand through June.
So it's January, it's 29% over, from January to June of 2020 over January of June 2021.
Yeah. Yes.
So with this anomaly of stimulus funds coming in, does that mean next year, if we can compare it to this year, we're going to lose about 30% next year?
That's what we're trying to figure out right now. As we come through with our budget projections, we're going to be able to discuss that more fully. There's a lot of debate. We're looking for the tax commission and the governor's office to put forward some of their early projections of what they think are going to happen. My gut feel is I'm not sure we can project a lot of increase, but I've been really conservative in the past, and so I'm going to get a lot of various opinions. I got to tap into an economist with science. A lot of you guys know I'm Spendlove. I get his reports. Every once in a while I get a chance to talk to him. And so there's a lot of data points that we're going to be going through trying to figure out if that really is the anomaly that we think we're seeing, and then where would our projections go for next year. But this is where it stands. January to June 2021 versus 2020. So that's sales tax in a nutshell.
Thanks, Curtis. So you can see, you know, Curtis has got his work cut out for him to try to figure this out for next year. You can see if we'll stay at the same level, if it's going to come down, whatever. I'm sure he'll keep it very conservative, so we'll be in good shape. Others, you can go down through, as you probably have reviewed everything. One thing I'd like to point out, that like the bus purchases, they were a little bit higher. They said they bought, see if I got this right, 4 35-footers and 2 paratransit, is that correct? So that's what's been purchased this year. And they're just running a little bit higher. Not too bad, I would think. Anything else? Fuel prices, of course, we all know that those have gone up. We were very low for the first part of the year, and now they've jumped up. So Curtis is, of course, keeping an eye on that. You're probably interested to know about the bus stop at the university. They are in construction phase right now, it's being there. It is not really by the business building, it's more like south of the agricultural science building that's there. If you drive by, you can see it there. But they're moving along nicely. I think they'll have it done within the time frame that they plan on.
I think they're about to start using it Monday.
I drove by today on the way here, and it had concrete, looked like it was done. It just looked like landscaping.
Yeah, they're working on landscaping now on the other end, so the bus stop itself, I'm sure, can be used. So. Question?
No, all right. I just have some information on that. So, so the signs will be going in the end of this week, and we'll be active Monday.
Okay, great. Yeah, thank you. So that's moving along nicely. So they'll
have a shelter going in there.
There will be eventually.
I think it'll be a very nice thing for the community to have that there, for the university and for the community.
I have to say it's nice that they are requiring masks on the USU buses as well as us having to require them still.
Yeah, that's a federal mandate. So.
Right, but it's nice that the university did it on the university buses too.
Any questions for Todd or Curtis on this?
Thanks, Glenn. Appreciate that. Appreciate everybody that reported. That's pretty exciting. Every committee is doing a lot of hard work, and I appreciate that. Nicole, can we go over and talk about HR?
Yes, let's do it. So we're just about 60 days of implementation from when I was here in June asking for help. And so the progress report is that at the time, you know, I had reported that we were about half the applications that we had received the previous 2 years for the specific time measurement. Since we implemented the plan, we have received 51 job applications for 4 job postings that we had posted. That includes full-time, part-time drivers, service workers, and mechanic. So that number was a significant increase compared to what we had seen the first half of the year. In fact, it was almost similar for just those 2 months, or about 60 days where we're at. I went back and compared how we were looking from the previous 2 years, and we're almost right back up to where we were from 2 years ago and what we were seeing over at the same time frame last summer. So it has been a positive increase in the number of applicants, but not just the number, but the quality of the applicants that we're able to select from. It's made a huge difference. So the impact that that has made is that we have been able to fill all of the full-time driver positions, the mechanic position. We are working on completing filling as much of the part-time as we can get. We will be operating at full weekday service beginning Monday, which our goal was, you know, the end of August. So beginning on Monday, we're going to be bringing back full weekday service. We still have some service to add back in for Saturday, but I think with the increase of part-time employees that we're seeing now, I would imagine that we can get back there shortly. So it had a really great positive impact on what our goals were and what we have been able to accomplish. So thank you for that support and the assistance in getting that done.
How did the employees respond to this?
Well, you can imagine our turnover rate went from 31% or 34% from the first half of the year to 5% right now. So our employees are actually really, really feeling the impact of that. And morale has changed. The way people are showing up for work, the engagement has changed. The way the employees are presenting CBTD to the community, I think has also changed. So I think it's been a great positive movement of what we needed to see. So thank you. Any other questions? Great. Awesome.
Thanks, Nicole.
Todd, tell us about your Summit Canopy field trip.
Okay, so we're fortunate in that Summit County in May started an on-demand service. So Summit County was having service provided to them by Park City, and that was a fixed route service. Park City and Summit County went through kind of some growing pains, and there was a separation. They felt like it was time for them to do things separate. And so Summit County came back with this idea of on-demand transit. So effective May of this year, they started an on-demand service. And so I took the executive team and we went there 2 weeks ago? So, and they gave us the red carpet treatment, which is what we'd asked for. We had prepped them by sending them some questions. Obviously, we have interest in what they're doing and how they're doing it. So we had sent them a lot of questions to help them prepare. They had a board member there that talked with us as well, and then the management staff. What they've chosen to do is partner with a company called VIA that does this type of service. And they've chosen to have VIA supply all the drivers and the vehicles and all of that. But still, so their service is very rural. And so they are serving areas that they weren't serving previously with fixed route, just because the on-demand is more flexible. And so they've chosen, and again, this is where on-demand is very flexible, but they've chosen that they only let people schedule 45 minutes in advance. And so you don't necessarily do these subscription chips where you can say, hey, this is where I'm going the next week, can I schedule the trips? They just let people schedule up to 45 minutes in advance, and people make their trips. They've seen quite a bit of success. They had initially quite a bit of public concern going from fixed route to on-demand. And so the director and I have talked at length multiple times, and she shared with me the concern people had with changing service. We don't like change. But now, overwhelmingly, they just have positive comments. People really like the on-demand service.
What do they charge for their service?
I can't remember. Oh, yeah, it is zero fare. Yeah, zero fare. Great learning opportunity for us to go and look at that and look behind the curtain, if you will. They talk to us a lot about the public process they involve and all of that stuff. And so we're looking at things, modeling things that are similar that we think are effective for us. And so it's just a great resource. But again, just a opportunity that's similar to us, not exactly the same, but similar in nature. And so again, as Kimberly Horn has identified, one of the things maybe that I could just explain is we asked Kimberly Horn to look at different alternatives, right? So there's alternatives like deviated fixed route, where they still have a fixed route, but somebody calls in and then you deviate off that route to go get that person. So we used to do that at Pepperidge Farm in Richmond. You can look at different things like that. So we looked at those alternatives, and Kimberly Horn really came back and said, on-demand is really your best approach in this area. So now we're looking at how would we do on-demand and these different alternatives. So anyway, just a great education. I thought I would share that with the board. We really are trying to stay current in the industry. You're going to see in our budget goals, and Curtis will talk about that, but training and exposure to other systems, what are they doing, is something we really try to do because we can learn a lot from that process. So, any questions?
Todd, how many vehicles, how many drivers, how many hours, how many days?
Boy, I don't remember all of that detail. Does anybody have a good memory?
For Cuyahoga Valley Transit?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I
can't remember all of that.
All I remember was the trip count, and they were between 350 and 500.
A month?
A day.
A day? In Summit County.
Is there a cost?
With free fare and direct to your trip, you know, your destination, yeah. You pick up, I mean, it's a taxi for free.
Well, again, I don't want us to get taxi in our mind, guys. But I really don't, and I appreciate what you're saying, Ron, but I don't want us to get the wrong expectation. This is ride sharing. This isn't This isn't a point-to-point taxi. Like, so again, I'm going to get picked up, and I may go drop off two people, pick up a person, and then get delivered.
Well, similar to our paratransit system.
Yeah, but I really am cautious of that because I don't want the public to get the wrong impression either, right? You say taxi, and people think, hey, it's just me in a car. And that is not what we're proposing with this service. So I appreciate what you're saying.
I
understand what you're saying.
Is there a cost on it with this, or...
Well,
neutral, or?
So they didn't have service for a while. When they and Park City separated, there was no service for a while. But I think their costs are a little bit more. But it's a new service. They're still trying to figure that all out.
Okay. Other comments? Let's switch topics, Todd.
Okay, just real quickly, the intelligent transportation system. And I really want us to think of this as a system, right? So when we talk of intelligent transportation, the thing that's most top of mind for us is an app that shows where the vehicles are in real time. But there's a lot more that goes to that. There's voice annunciators on the buses that announce the stops. So currently, our drivers do that over the PA. And some drivers can speak louder than others, and it's not always consistent, right? So we have a computer program that does that. We can set which stops are announced. But this is for the visually impaired, right? And so it makes it so that they can know where they're at on the route. We also can put a sign inside the bus that actually shows that as well. So for the hearing impaired, they can see that, right? They can see their stop. So there's things like that will make it consistent. And then the other part of that that's really we're excited about are automatic passenger counters. So again, currently what we do is the drivers count passengers. And then at the transit center, they'll write that down. So we can tell you in a given run how many passengers are on off that bus. But when Sean comes to me, and many of you do, but Sean says, hey, Todd, how many people rode from Hiram in the last quarter? I really can't tell you that. Because we used to do a sampling every 3 years to get that information, and then we would calculate that out. What this will do is give us automatic time of day, day of the week, at every stop, how many people are using that bus. And so from a planning perspective, and this is what I'm excited about, from a planning perspective, it can really help us, right? So Sean and I were talking earlier today, when we're looking at, where is the bus stops, where is the route being used, we can say, hey, there's a hot zone here. All right, what's going on here? What's drawing that? Hey, why are we having ridership here? Does on-demand make sense? Can we change this routing? And really, we start to put fixed route where fixed route really should go. Maybe we put on-demand where it's not as effective. And so this is exciting for us to have that type of planning tool. So, but that whole system, we've got the RFP out on the street right now, meaning that the vendors out there are looking at that currently and all the specifications for that. But we had a Representative Moore, if you remember, a few meetings back, he came to talk to us. He put in a congressional directed spending request, what used to be called an earmark, for us to fund this system and vehicles, and also maybe our on-demand system. But we anticipated when he submitted that, this was months and months ago, that we would probably know by now whether or not we got that. Well, then the whole infrastructure bill happened, right? And there's a lot of politics around that, and that's been delayed. And the request that we have submitted is an appropriation, so it's a whole different bill. And then now you've got this whole other bill, this $3.5 trillion bill. So all of this politics has slowed down our knowledge of whether or not we'll even get this request. Now we're still in touch with the congressman's staff, we still are hopeful, but we're not certain if we're gonna get that or when. So we're now working to decide, okay, what do we do? Do we move forward without federal money? That means we use local money that we could use to leverage with federal money and other projects. Do we pull back, maybe slow this down, and wait to find out if we're gonna get the federal money? And that's probably what we're looking at doing. My point in all of that is, we were really geared up to deliver this in March of next year. We may look at delivering this in June or July, because we may get some federal funding for that, to purchase 80% of that. And so we're in the process, we're working with the staff, but more than likely we might deliver that later in the year. We know that delays it. And this is where Abraham's suggestion of us working with developer, Logan Transit developer, to have an app that's functioning well. And it is, that app is out there if you go and download Logan Transit. The Transit app is another one that also functions well. So we still have those for the public. We think it's maybe wise to slow the process down and see if we can get this federal money. So that's kind of where we're at with that. Any other questions?
So Todd, I have a really maybe dumb question.
Okay.
If you can't tell how many people rode from Hiram, how do you know that the routes on your on-demand area are underutilized?
So that's a great question. So when I say we don't know, we do know. We can talk to the drivers, and they have a good idea.
Anecdotal information.
Correct. It's not scientific. But every 3 years we're doing the sampling, and we can look at the history of that sampling and look. But yeah, sometimes the data is 3 years old. And so we were supposed to sample again in 2020. And we were scheduled to sample, but then when COVID hit, the FDA suspended those rules and said, hey, focus on just getting people where they need to go. And so we didn't sample that year, and we haven't been asked to sample this year. So yes, we've lost that tool a little bit, but we still know based on the anecdotal information with the data from the previous sampling that, you know, the ridership in that area is still pretty consistent, that it's pretty low.
Okay.
That's a great question. But we are excited to get this tool in our toolbox to use for planning purposes.
Follow-up question to that is, do you measure, or is it even critical to know how far they travel? Say, once they get on in Richmond, do they get off in Smithfield at the high school? Do they go into Logan to work? Do they go down to Hiram to JBS? I mean, is that important at all?
Curtis is just itching to answer this question, but I'm going to take it.
Sorry, Curtis.
And then if I totally screw it up, we'll let him jump in. So as part of this sampling process, this is what we call the National Transit Database. We all have to submit information to that. As part of that process, we do this sampling. And as part of that, Terry, we actually do extrapolate how far people are riding. And there's a whole formula and how we do that, and I'm not going to bore you with all that, but we do track passenger miles, how far they're going, and then that helps us with funding, right? So a lot of our funding that comes to us comes through formulas, and so it's based on population, a bunch of other things, but it's also based on this. How far are people riding? How many people are riding? And so I will say one of the things that has hurt us a little bit, but again, conscious choice of us providing better service, was the loop. So prior to the loop, everything went through the transit center. And the way the National Transit Database counts trips is someone gets off a bus and on another bus, that's a trip, right? So someone can start out in Hiram and they get the transit center and then they transfer to Route 1 to go to the university, that's two trips. Because it is, every time I'm deferring a car trip, that's a trip. Well, when we started the loop, we knew that there's some people that now they're not going to have to transfer, right? I go from the university to downtown, where before that was two buses and now it's one. And so that's the decision we made to provide better service, but we knew it would hurt our trip count, hurt our passenger miles. Mm-hmm. And so to some degree, I guess it wouldn't hurt our passenger miles, would it, Curtis? All right, that's all right. You're right. But it hurts our trip count, and those are things that do come into play when we're looking at comparisons, how do we compare peers, other things like that. Curtis wants me to have a script. He doesn't mind me speaking off the cuff like this. It's always dangerous. It's all speaking off the cuff. The thing is, I'll admit when I'm wrong.
Very good. Other questions? Anybody else want to say anything? No? Okay. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate you joining. Curtis, can you introduce the budget for 2022?
I can. This is the time of year that we all love, and Mike gets up and leaves. So. So we actually start our budget process in July, and so that we can hit certain targets. And what we want to start with, we always start with, okay, what was our last year's budget? How are we doing with this? Where do we stand? And so we've given you a sheet, and I'm not going to go through every single item on this. But I want to hit just a couple key points. The wage adjustment made a world of difference, and Nicole is in much better spirits. Thank you. Jody is in like incredible. No, but the big key is we hit the deadline because of you guys that we're going to have service in place when the university starts back up, and we know there's a lot of trips going there. So thank you. That was very key. We're continuing to monitor that. And I probably should have mentioned one of the factors that we're trying to factor in with sales tax is this increase in wages because we're seeing it throughout the valley. I don't know if you guys are seeing it, but we're seeing it. And people are responding in various ways, but that's also going to put money right back into the economy because those types of jobs, they tend to spend immediately what they make. I'm not speaking bad against the people, I'm just saying what their spending habits tend to be. We focus on safety. We have a safety program that right now our drivers appreciate, and they're showing it because we're not hitting stuff. and that saves us in the long term. We have people hitting us, but our claims are down, and we're really appreciative of where we're at with the current safety program.
What is vehicle fogging?
Vehicle fogging. So what we are doing is we actually bought a fogging machine because of COVID that will actually go through. And Jody, you're better explaining this than I will be.
So it's a misting machine.
Electrostatic spray.
Pardon?
Electrostatic spray.
Yeah, it's based on that. It's Mars is more compression function, and so it mists the...
the interior of the buses?
So it's a huge disinfectant.
Yeah, it mists the disinfectant solution that we have. So you have a tank, and then you have a spray gun, and you walk through the bus at the end of the night, every night, and it sprays it and then settles on all of the surfaces and disinfects the surfaces. Sorry, I couldn't find disinfectant.
It's basically a COVID response that we're doing. So it seems to be effective so far.
Did they breathe it in?
We have respirators for them.
To apply it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it all settles overnight.
Yeah.
So in the morning it's not a big deal, but the people spraying it have to have a respirator.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah. I was curious.
Nope, that's a great question. We're working on the current facility. We're anxious to get our general contractor on under contract, and then we can start the next step, which is them working together, being able to come back through with more specific designs and start to build cost estimates. We're hoping that'll happen sometime, I'd like to say September, but we might be looking October with some initial cost estimates of what we're looking at. So, and at that point, we'll have both the architect and the contractor giving us estimates, so they should be much more refined. The service designs we talked about, we're continuously monitoring that. And so We came to the board last year asking for money to develop a partnership with a planning firm that recommended Kimley Horn. They were the ones who scored out the highest through our rigorous process, similar to like what you saw with the selecting a CMGC. Kimley Horn has exceeded our expectations in a lot of ways. They've been very responsive, and those efforts have been very successful, and we're able to present really sharp images of service alternatives and have explanations of why we're getting to those areas. So that part has been very successful with what we're doing with our public funds. And then, as was mentioned, we take possession of 4 35-foot buses and 2 paratransit buses. And more importantly, from my standpoint, and very selfishly, we've lined up all the funding we need to replace all the buses we're going to replace through 2024. So we have we have capital grants for all of those. We still need matching funds, but we have all, and that there's a significant number of buses. Jody and I were going through. So we replaced the 4 this year. We'll do 8 next year, and then 5 more. It looks like in 2023. So over the course of that, that's 17 of the 29 buses. So we're going to replace a substantial portion through 2024. So. That we're excited about. So, what are we looking forward to? And we go through this process. We used to call these objectives, we renamed it to priorities, because what we're trying to communicate to you is, as we've analyzed what the system needs and where we're currently at, we've labeled out some priorities the way that we see them, and what we want to do is communicate those priorities to you so that we can have discussion in here. If these priorities need to shift, be adjusted, we want to make sure you have time to consider these. So this is going to be a live working document over the course of the next 3 months. Literally into December it could, but really it's going to drive a lot of decisions that we make over the course of the next couple months. From my standpoint, I would appreciate it if you really review these, see if you agree with them, see if there's something we need to have here as a discussion item. But we found, especially over this last year, our employees, if we don't have them, we can't give service. And so they continue to be our biggest asset in a lot of ways. So we found that being competitive in the market has its effect on us. And so we're going to continuously watch for how are we doing in the marketplace. We are anticipating adding one full-time position. We're calling this a scheduling coordinator. This goes back a number of years. We used to do bids. We're moving more to where we have shifts that are open and we schedule people into the shifts. And so it schedules a lot different, but what we're finding is it takes a person functioning in that area and making sure, and there's some other job duties that we can shift in this and free up our operations supervisors and our dispatchers to do jobs that they're more suited and have the tools to do those, and then have a scheduling person that's just making sure we're getting service on the street. And so we are proposing adding that one full-time position. If we decide to go with one of the service alternatives, it would also allow us to schedule those people into those shifts as well. And we're anticipating with all of that, we would be recommending, just from being able to provide service, one more full-time position. Capital plan, as I mentioned, 8 buses, 2 paratransit buses, and the intelligent transportation system. We'd be paying for all of that, as well as looking at as we come to the board with the service alternatives, we'll be bringing cost estimates and be ready to flow those into either the budget or into a budget amendment. There is a possibility that a decision isn't, there's not enough information to make a decision, but that may be where the board lands, and so we may have to do a budget amendment to actually bring that service in. If it depends on where we get to with the analysis and public outreach and where the board feels comfortable, but that's definitely something that will involve the board to discuss. Safety comes right after that. We don't have the people, don't have the capital, we got to operate it safely, and so our proposal is to keep our safety plan in place the way that it currently is established. There is a financial commitment there because there's incentives to the drivers to drive safe, but we would like to continue that plan. And then we've had some outreach efforts. We want to continue those. We think we've made great progress. And great thanks to Patrick and everybody that's been making efforts to meet with local officials. Having community support is incredibly valuable, and there's a lot that's gained as we involve others and they know the decisions that are being made by this board. And finally, in wrapping up, we've got to have a ride to the future. And so another of our priorities is to keep in place funding with the planning and looking at if there's other opportunities that we should be coming to the board as far as service delivery mechanisms. And this could even change the types of buses that we use to deliver that service, what's making sense. Working with the MPO to identify transportation corridors, and also working with the first mile, last mile study to see if there's areas that we should be implementing or considering for future ideas. And so we want to keep our eyes to the future so we can keep bringing recommendations to the board of how do we continue to provide the best service that we can to the citizens. That, in a nutshell, is our priorities.
Let's talk about workshops on September 6th and 13th.
Yeah, so Once again, I'm gonna really reiterate, please review these priorities. If you have recommendations, changes, please coordinate through Todd or me so that we can bring those up and discuss them, because we really want this to drive where the actual budget goes to. There's a lot of easy nuts and bolts to the budget. I mean, we know we're gonna use fuel. And just for the record, I looked at fuel, it was right around $1, a little bit over a year ago. It's 327, or three times the price, and so there's gonna be a chunk that goes to fuel. But look at these priorities. Look and see if they line up with what the board's values are, and if they're the correct way that's driving the budget discussion. Then our goal is to come through in October and, or sorry, September. Is it September when we're having a budget meeting? No, October.
No, it's October.
It's October. We'll be giving you dates of when we're going to have budget workshops.
October 4th and 11th.
October 4th and 11th. One, you can pick one, you can come to both. A lot of what we go through is going to be the same in both meetings. So it's not like you have to attend both. It's not like we're going to cover half the budget, one half the budget. We'll cover the entire budget. But what we'll do is we'll give you the basic draft budget, allow you to ask questions through these workshops, provide us input, give feedback on are we staying within the priorities that the board's decided on. And basically help that process along so that we can have a solid budget. Remember, in November, we have to have a tentative budget adopted, and then final budget has to be adopted in December.
Do you know the time and date?
Of the what?
The time and date.
We typically have done like 5:30, but again, we've done two in the past, but again, if we need another one, we can. I mean, so we're starting with two. We'll send those out. Anyone have any concerns with those two dates? Anyone can't make either one of them work?
You said it was the 4th and the 11th?
Correct, the 1st and 2nd. You can't make either of those work?
I'll be back in the desk. I can call in.
Okay, we did this, yeah. Option. Okay.
Yeah,
we can definitely do that.
Okay.
What you don't want to avoid is a December midnight meeting where we're all fighting over budget priorities and we can't make it happen. So if we can front load the attention on this, budgets flow through far more smooth.
Yes. We're not Congress, so.
But we act a lot like Congress.
So. Aw, I think we do a lot better than you.
I will say there have been some times when it's been contentious.
Yes.
We really do appreciate your input, though, on the budget process, and we really have had a good flow. I know there's debates back and forth, and those are good, but thank you for your input. I look forward to working through this process. Questions? Concerns?
Curtis, thank you. That was great. Holly, can you give us a report on our board Christmas party?
Okay. Patrick, I think if you remember in June, I think it was, Patrick had suggested we take our holiday Christmas, who needs the university, can't say Christmas. Anyway, he suggested we take our money for our Christmas party and have a barbecue for the employees, the transit. And so anyway, we did that on the 10th of August, and a few board members came. It was a lot of fun. And it was really good because we were able to connect up with the employees. You don't really have hardly any chance ever to do that. And find out a little bit about them, and they came with families and spouses and whatever, and had a good time eating and got fed, and we got to know them. So it was really a good experience for all of us, something we really needed. So we appreciate you all letting us do that.
Nicole, anything from the HR standpoint?
Yeah, you know, we got a lot of great feedback because it was different than the way we typically do the employee barbecue.
Because hamburgers
weren't cooked. Yeah, it was actually great to have you guys out. I think our employees appreciated that too. Getting to know you guys, because you know it's just the board, right? But getting to know you guys and having some face time with you guys, I think, mm-hmm. is important for them too. So it was great.
Great, thank you. Thanks, Holly.
So they normally have a barbecue?
We've had barbecues in the past, yeah, for sure.
Okay, so what did our contribution add to the barbecue?
Like Nicole said, just the fact that board members would come, that's the first time we've ever had board members come and attend. Oh. I think they feel special. They felt well appreciated, you know, that yeah. you were there.
But and we hadn't budgeted for this year. We'd taken that out because of COVID concerns, and so we weren't planning on them this year.
Oh, okay.
You guys added it back in.
That's great.
Thank you. Hey, the second thing I want to talk about is the bus rodeo. It occurred on the only day in 2021 where it rained.
Yes.
So kudos to everybody. I mean, I thought we had a fantastic turnout. I'll be honest with you, it was the first time I'd ever attended one of the bus rodeos in Franklin, but it's the first time that most of the elected officials had attended one, not Jamie. But thanks for all those that did attend. Good board presence there, and it was awesome to see everybody kind of engaging. That's really what we're trying to do, is engage with our elected officials. We don't want to get in a muscle flexing contest with different entities. We want to kind of build the community together, and that's a great foray for that. Plenty of any comments on that?
I think, again, the fact that we had so many people show up was because you guys and your outreach and your invitation. You know, really, I appreciate the relationships you have. Don't underestimate going to a council meeting or just having a conversation walking down the street. It makes a difference. So continue to do that outreach. And if you ever need help or anything, just let me know.
Can we do a few more of these this fall until we can get up to our annual precipitation level?
Yeah.
We actually made that joke as well.
Oh, okay.
If that's all it was
going to
take.
Yeah.
Any other comments this evening? Thanks everybody for their participation. It seems like everybody had a presentation tonight. I appreciate the teamwork here. I appreciate everybody's efforts. Thank you, members of the CBTD. We are done.